Good afternoon. You're listening to Campus K News for Wednesday, November 12th. I'm Taylor Heckert. Every year on Veterans Day in Petersburg, the community school district honors local veterans with a parade. Yesterday morning, community members and students packed the sidewalks outside of the elementary school. A line of fire trucks and cars filled with veterans stretched around the block. Kids ran up to deliver thank you cards and posters while the parade of veterans in vehicles rolled through the street to the tune of cheers and honking. Local quilters sewed quilts of valor for 9 Petersburg veterans this year. The special quilts are presented at the end of the parade, draped around the shoulders of the veterans in a gesture of appreciation. KFSK's Olivia Rose brings us this audio postcard from Petersburg's Veterans Day Parade.
My name is Jim Engel. I am a high school social studies teacher. Started teaching here in 1992. And Sid Wright, who was a high school principal back in the 80s, he was of World War II and a Korean veteran, and he felt it was very important for the school to honor the veterans in the community. So 12 years ago, I think, is when we made it a joint celebration with all the schools, starting with an assembly in the gymnasium. And then COVID forced our hand, and we started doing the parade. So the veterans will go past us with their cars. The quilts are being handed out to people that have been made people in the community. So it's a fairly quick, but Pledge of Allegiance is going on.
I'm Carol Candle. We started the Quilts of Valor project for Petersburg in 2016, and as of today, we will have awarded 146 quilts to local veterans, and all the different branches of service are represented. Coast Guard is a big one for us because of what it means to us as a community, a fishing community, to have their rescue effort. So it's very meaningful for those who were really touched by war. And some have said, thank you for this quilt, but I think about the guys who didn't come home. So it's pretty cool to see how so many of them are just so thankful and thinking of their brothers who they lost. Brian's my husband. We have the Providence. Brian hit a rock down the Narrows, and the Coast Guard came, and Eric Dreisbaugh, he saw that Brian was in trouble, so he got on to help, and he went above and beyond. So that's Eric Dreisbaugh.
Hey, Brian has a story. Yeah.
Well, I'm Brian Candle. I've got the Providence. It hit a rock in the Narrows, and it's been 99, 2000, yeah. And so Eric was one of the first responders. He was in the Coast Guard then. And all they were supposed to do was drop off the pump. But he could see we were having some problems getting other stuff going. So he jumped aboard, got the pump going, and got off again. But pretty special memory for me.
Pretty great.
Yeah, I remember that, Brian.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Eric Dreisbaugh, live in Petersburg. I served on the Coast Guard cutter Anacapa for 2 tours in Petersburg, and we got the call that the Providence had hit Spike Rock, and we're in need of assistance, so we loaded up our pumps and went down there and, did what we could to help them, and it all worked out in the end, so, everybody was happy for the outcome. Grateful for all the support that Petersburg gives their veterans. Thanks.
Hi, on behalf of the Quilts of Valor Foundation and the Quilts of Valor group in Petersburg, we want to thank your service.
Thank you, ma'am.
It's very well appreciated, especially because your Coast Guard does so much for our town.
Yeah, this is where I started out. My name is Michael Chenoweth. I joined the Coast Guard in 1996, and Petersburg was my first unit. And the work that I know goes into these quilts is pretty amazing. It's very special to be given this honor, and I know there are so many others that deserve even more. So I'm proud to be part of the veteran group. Thank you. Thank you, Carol.
You're welcome. Thank you for your service. I present to you a quilt made by Miriam and I.
Thank you. Thank you. Special. My name is Tracy Vinson. I'm a U.S. Navy veteran. I did 9 years in the Navy. This means a lot to me because I just love my country so much, and it means so much for everybody to come out here and just support us and just be just a nice, warm, welcoming community.
My name is Brad King. I'm the principal at the high school and middle school. It's a great honor to serve the country, and it's nice that it's still recognized. Thank you.
My name's Jared Pilcher. This is actually an honor. You know, I've seen a lot of great veterans come through here. I was just a part of the military for about 4 years, and the much other people had sacrificed a lot more than I have, but I appreciate it. It is an honor. This is awesome that the elementary school and the high school and all the Petersburg school district get together and do this. It's an amazing fort for all the veterans to get out here and see the support of the community. Thank you.
That was an audio postcard from the Veterans Day Parade yesterday morning in Petersburg. The number of Democrats running for governor of Alaska grew to 2 on Monday as Anchorage State Senator Matt Klayman entered the race. Klayman has represented West Anchorage in the state legislature for more than a decade and says his experience working across the aisle prepares him well for the top job in state government.
Running for governor because I think that Alaska needs a person with my background and experience and balanced approach to doing what's best for Alaska.
Klayman is a member of the 14-person Senate Majority Caucus that includes 9 Democrats and 5 Republicans. He's chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee and in 2024 led the effort to pass a wide-ranging crime bill that Republican Governor Mike Dunleavy later signed. The bill stiffened penalties for drug dealers, among other changes. Klayman says his campaign will focus on public safety and education, and both will be priorities in his budget if he's elected.
I think we should pay an affordable dividend, but I also think we need to invest in our public schools and invest in public safety to protect our neighborhoods.
Klayman is the second Democrat to officially enter the race, following former Anchorage State Senator Tom Begich. Begich has said he plans to step aside if former Congresswoman Mary Peltola, the last Democrat to win a statewide election, enters the race. Klayman declined to make a similar commitment. Klayman also says he does not plan to resign his Senate seat to run for governor. He's the 14th candidate to formally enter the race. The top 4 vote-getters in the August 2026 primary, regardless of party, will advance to the ranked choice general election. Candidates have until June 1st to join the race. Former state senator and gubernatorial candidate Tom Begich visited Sitka last week on the campaign trail toward the tail end of his Community Conversations tour. KCAW's Catherine Rose caught up with Begich, a Democrat, to discuss his race for the governor's seat and where he stands on issues important to Sitkins and other Southeast Alaska communities.
How would you approach fixing the ferry system? What would that look like, especially given that, you know, federal funding has become more, I think, challenging to secure?
Yeah, it's become more challenging to secure, but we've also not done our part here locally. When we have funded deferred maintenance for the ferry system, that funding has been vetoed often, and we simply can't continue down that road. The ferry system is the only toll road in the state of Alaska. Every one of you who gets on that ferry has to pay for it. And in South Central, where I was born, where I grew up, we don't have to pay for our roads like you do, but we're still state roads. Highway 7 connects Haines to Ketchikan, and yet Highway 7 is only connected that way by the ferry system. So the state has an obligation to fully fund it. So we have to, I believe, do what I have called a general obligation bond, where we actually bond to catch up with our deferred maintenance for schools, for the university, for state buildings, but more importantly, for the ferry system. And there's been resistance to that in the legislature, and it does require the legislature to agree. But if we did that, we'd have the ability to do front-end investment that kickstarts what I would call a renaissance in our ferry system. I've been riding it since I was an infant, and I want to make sure that it is the ferry system that this community in Sitka and the communities throughout Southeast can actually use.
Another issue that's important to folks in Southeast is the Tongass National Forest. I wonder what your thoughts are on timber in the Tongass and how that resource should be managed.
Well, it's a complex issue because there are so many different levels of interest. any timber that you're cutting, you have to do with a sustainable yield. And we've learned over the last 50 years of sustainable yield, which is what we claimed it would take to regrow a forest, is actually much longer than that. So if we're going to develop our timber industry and if we're going to develop timber jobs, we have to do so in a manner that does not damage our subsistence or commercial fishing interest. It has to be done in a manner that also is cost effective. So we have to balance these various interests. But what I think is exciting is that we can also look into the future in innovative ways we can work with our forests and forest management. And part of that is the carbon credit bill that passed a couple of years ago, which allows us to set aside state lands or in the case of Sea Alaska, they've set aside some of their lands and generate income that can be used for employment opportunity to help deal with infrastructure needs. Those kinds of things we haven't even begun to explore.
You mentioned prioritizing subsistence needs. Do you support continuing a rural subsistence priority?
I do. But I did say rural subsistence and commercial fishing priority, both of which are important. These are interests that can be compatible. They do not need to be non-compatible. What you want to do is maintain the stocks, because if you don't maintain the stocks, neither of them can happen. I don't agree with the administration's position on trying to eliminate that priority. I think that that is in the best interest of all Alaskans, that we maintain the ability for us, if we choose to live off the land, especially for those of our residents who've been doing it for 10,000 years. That said, again, balancing interests, you've got to do that.
How would you work through federal cuts to programs that Alaskans rely on, like the tsunami warning system, given the state's budget situation?
Well, first, the premise of the question says that we have a dire budget situation here, which is actually, I don't buy that concept. I think we have at least, you know, I've been able to calculate up to nearly $1 billion we've left on the table. Some of it's tough decision making, but let's put this idea that we can't make a decision because we don't have any money. I mean, we have $86.4 billion in our permanent fund accounts. And of that, some of which is usable, some of which, of course, we preserve. I don't know if we can rely on the federal government any longer, whether in this administration or even future ones. You know, they haven't always been friendly to Alaska interests. This administration has clawed back funding that had been coming to the state. They're about to claw back more in terms of what potentially we could lose Medicaid. And so my goal would be, instead of reversing, if you will, the premise of the question, is to identify those things we must do in the state of Alaska, whether it's how we provide health care for people, whether it's how we provide food for people, or whether it's how we provide medical services for people outside of just basic health care. These things we have to address as a state, and that means we may have to take on some of that burden. I believe that we can do that. I believe that it, again, requires comprehensive planning. And this idea that, you know, someday down the road, we're gonna tap another hole in the ground and a new resource is going to pay for everything alone is not enough. We also have to take responsibility here as a state for our future.
That was gubernatorial candidate Tom Begich speaking with KCAW's Catherine Rose. This interview is also available online at kcaw.org. For Campus K, I'm Taylor Heckert.